Screwtape Letters podcast friends and faithful, our book, Confronting Evil in Our Time, is now available for pre-order and will be in stores everywhere on October 20th, 2025. As Paul writes in Ephesians 6:12, "For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against the principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against the spiritual wickedness in high places." Confronting Evil in Our Time arms you to confront them, reject their lies, and put Jesus Christ at the center of your life. When you're finished with the book, pass it forward. Open the eyes of friends to the spiritual warfare that rages on. Galen and I have poured our hearts into the pages of this book over the past year, wrestling truth from the shadows. We need your support. Grab a copy today, and God bless. So welcome back to the Screwtape Letters podcast, Confronting Evil in Our Time. It's been a whirlwind of season two. And as we get ready to release our book, Confronting Evil in Our Time, which is both going to be an exploration about how demonic forces enter our life and the spiritual warfare that carries on around us. But it's also there as for the opposite side. And Galen, you and I were talking about this morning, which is the purpose of these interviews and with the guide with laying out within these podcasts is for people to live a richer, more beautiful life with Christ at the center of it.
100%. I mean, we go over a lot of information. We started with the Screwtape Letters book and we expand on that, but we're not here to talk about things. We really do want to move the needle for people, help people grow in their faith, help people overcome victory, obviously be able to confront the issues of the day and walk in wisdom. So that's our heart behind it. It's not just to talk about things, but really move the needle for good in the world.
So today, we are interviewing a gentleman by the name of David Smallbone, who he and I share a couple of things in common, except that he's much wiser and vintage than I am. And August 15th, give you the frame of how we actually met. I was at an Extreme Faith production celebrating their 23rd year here in Phoenix, Arizona. Sanctus Real and the Afters were performing. But we had the pleasure of a young lady getting on stage by the name of Helen Smallbone and giving a testimony to which me and my wife were absolutely riveted by it. And at the end of it, outside, Helen was talking to people and I saw David around the back and just, I wanted to understand just a question I had from about an artist that was involved in his whole story. So, David, thank you so much for joining us. This is a real honor. And Unsung Hero is out, which tells your story. But for those that may not have watched it or want to see it again, can you give us a brief overview of your story?
Well, I've, by the way, young bloke, old bloke, thank you so much for having me on. This is an honor. I'm 15, and I was having some meetings this morning, and I said to a couple of people, I said, I am more excited about sharing the most wonderful message known to man today than I ever have been in my life. And I don't know if that's because mortality is around the corner. I don't know if it's because we just lost Charlie Kirk, but I you know, you guys contacting me and even, you know, Ian, you just mentioned Helen. And I've been given a incredibly wonderful life. I had a pretty normal life. I worked mainstream music, TV, radio, record labels, and then got into Christian music probably, 40 years ago, 45 years ago. And then I was promoting, I had a record label and everything. And then, how many years ago was it? It was 36 years ago. I did a big tour in Australia with one of the biggest artists in our business and lost everything on that tour and tried to trade out of it, had to sell the house. And I went to Helen, my beloved, 34 years ago and said, "Hey, babe, I think the only way we can get ahead is if we go to America." And 34 years ago, she said, "We'll go for 2 years." And that started us living by faith. I came over here to work for an artist he let me go after 2 months. So we lived in poverty for the first 2 years of our time here in America. And that moved me from lukewarm to passionate. I saw the hands and feet of Jesus through a church here in Franklin called People's Church, now called Church of the City. And it's almost like here I am at 75. I think going through a reversal like that should be required living for every man. Because you know what us men are like. We're a little egocentric. We've got everything in control. And I had everything taken away. And I've been given a wonderful life. I've a wonderful wife, wonderful life. But I was lukewarm, you know. And then I saw the hands and feet of Jesus. And that shows up in the movie Unsung Heroes. There's a bit of poetic license in it. But, you know, I find, you know, I look at life now and I think women are made more spiritually sensitive than us men. And I think us men have to go through some crises to really work out what's important. So now I love the challenge of sharing this wonderful message to as many people as possible. I'll end the story by saying I manage a bank off the King Country. They're my sons. And our core principles are loving the brokenhearted and sharing the most wonderful message known to man to as many people as possible. And we share this message through music, and I'm just honored that I can be a small part of the whole process.
David, it's really interesting you mentioned living through poverty, because I think a lot of people will use that, and they're not really in poverty, they're just not doing great. But when Helen told the story, and especially the way the family would gather to go and do lawns in the area and to do anything to scrape money together to get by, you know, you guys really were in that situation. And, you know, how did you get through that situation? Because like, it's easy in those moments to, and we talk about it with the law of undulation, but C.S. Lewis gives this concept that you go through troughs and you go through peaks. But it's easy in those troughs to fall on the world and fall away from Christ. How did you stay faithful? What was that journey like?
I think the church, like, it's funny you asking me this question, because it's almost emotional for me, because it is emotional, because it really changed me, because I up till that time, I was 42. I was a mover and shaker. You know, I could make things happen. In a funny kind of way, I was probably Mr. Christian Music in Australia. I'd started the Hillsong record label with Brian Houston and Jeff Bullock, and I'd done all the tours with all the major artists. And then it was in a blink of an eye, it was all taken away. And I think for the first 2 months, I thought, you know, the deal that I had with this artist was I would get $2,000 a month. And I got that for the first 2 months, and then that stopped. But in that first 2 months, we'd started to build friendships with the local church. And there was one particular guy who took us under his wing, a songwriter by the name of John Moore. He wrote a lot for Steve Green. He wrote a song called Love in Any Language. Mm-hmm. And he was doing very well at that time. And I, for whatever reason, he gave us a car, I remember. He believed that his responsibility was to help us survive this blow to the solar plexus. So it was he and then a lot of other people at church. Like, he would take us out for Chinese after church every Sunday. As I said, he gave us the car. He would just stay in touch with us. He and his family just loved on us. And I saw the hands and feet of Jesus. And I think what that crazy time did, it brought my marriage closer together. Like, I had a good marriage. There was nothing, but we, as a family, we had to fight together. The other thing that happened is we had nowhere else to go but to pray. And I still remember Joel was, I think, 8 at the time. He's one of the guys in for King Country. I remember him praying in our lounge room that had no furniture, "Lord, please put food on the table." And most weeks we didn't know how we were going to pay the bills the following week. That was either the rent for the house or put food on the table. But we always had enough. And I think two things. As a family, we went deeper in prayer. And secondly, and this is the other thing I'd say to anybody who's going through a hard time at the moment, make sure you're connected with your local church. Because we weren't out there telling everybody at the church that we're going through hard times. For some reason, they just knew. And people would drop groceries on our front doorstep. We had a neighbor come over to us and say, "Hey," and we come from Australia, and as you know, Australia's post-Christian. Normally in Australia, we're the only people in our street going to church. And she said, "Oh, I want to invite you to come to my church." We never had that happen to us before. So we felt the love of our neighbors, and we felt the love of Jesus. We felt the love of the church, and we felt the love of this John Moore and his family, John and Luann Moore. By the way, they then went on to, after looking after us for a couple of years, they went on to be missionaries in Ukraine, and they were in Ukraine for about 10 years. And so just sweet people. We were definitely challenged through the idea of survival to go deeper with Jesus. I'm not sure we had anywhere else to go. I've worked in the music business, both mainstream Christian, up till that time for about probably 20 years, maybe a bit longer. And the industry rejected me at that time, but the church loved on me, and it changed. I'm still a Lord Jesus follower, but it changed me to the core.
Mm. Yeah, that's incredible. How was it specifically, even as a father? Because how many children did you have at the time when all this was going down?
And we had six and another one coming. There was one.
Okay.
Another one was due in December. We arrived in Nashville in September. September 34 years ago.
So six kids, one on the way, huge, major tour, fails, crashes, and burns. An incredible financial hardship. No stress at all, right? Baby on the way. when you look at that, that resonates with me as a father. That's powerful. How did you lead your family through all that? Obviously, you're talking about how the church was there, but just how did, or a better question, how did you know so clearly from the Lord that such a big move was something that you guys would have been doing? Because it must have taken a level of faith and courage to move your family across the entire globe in a situation like that.
Well, in Australia, I tried to trade out for a couple of years after I lost $750,000, sold the house and everything, tried to trade out, realized I couldn't. And I was, you know what happens when someone goes broke, you know, you ended up being viewed as a leper. And I was viewed like that in Australia. And so the big, the clincher was, and I still remember shaking in my boots when I went to Helen and I said, "Hey, babe, I think the only way we can get ahead is go to America." And I thought she'd say no, but she said, "We'll go for 2 years." And here we are 34 years later. And it's almost like I recommend for every man to go through hardship, because in a funny kind of way, what shows up in the movie Unsung Hero, I think it was done for me. Because I was a spoiled rich kid, lived in a really nice house in Sydney, probably the nicest house we'd ever lived in. We was doing things that I wanted to do, had a record label, I was promoting concerts. But I hadn't embraced Jesus fully. And you know what a mental like, and I think it's one of the things I love about C.S. Lewis, because one of his major things is move away from selfishness. And what that whole experience did for me, it challenged me to give my life away and no longer. And I think it was part of my spiritual growth, because 10 years into marriage, I'd read a book by Larry Crabb called Inside Out. And it had a chapter in it called unconditional love. I started loving my wife unconditionally. And then 6 years after that, when I turned 40, that's when I lost everything. And I think it was all part of my growth. I had to go through, you know, starting to love unconditionally instead of conditionally. And then I had to lose everything to put my total trust in Jesus. And I think because my wife is a very spiritual lady, you know, it's interesting about me. I cry when I talk about two people. You're probably going to make me cry now, but I cry when I talk about Jesus, because he challenged me to give my life away. And I cry when I talk about Helen, because she's loved on me unconditionally. I'm a bit of a piece of work. I'm not sleeping around. I'm not doing pornography. But you know what it's meant to like. We don't get it right all the time. But I think the secret source, you know, really looking at your questions, the secret source of what you're asking is, how did you survive those first couple of years? I think two answers. Helen loved on me when I was broken. Hmm. And I was broken, guys. And the church.
David, you know, when Helen was talking, one of the things that really resonated with me when she said, if I would have criticized him or said anything mean to him during that time, it could have broken him.
True. And she didn't. She was very supportive. I remember one of the things we used to do, we had no furniture in the house, and so the kids were all sleeping on the floor. We're all sleeping on the floors. But we'd just walk down the front driveway hand in hand, you know, the street, and we'd my eldest Rebecca would look after the kids, and we'd just hold hands and talk. And I think the prayer thing was absolutely huge, the church embracing us. But the other thing that I don't think I've told you guys is that my mom had a nervous breakdown at exactly that age. And I think that's one of the reasons why Helen mentioned that night you were there, Ian. And she mentioned it, we were just over in Albuquerque a week ago, and she mentioned it there again. And after it was all over, she was out there signing books and talking to people. A number of people came up and talked about exactly the same thing. And maybe, you know, to the women out there who are watching this, us men are more fragile than we let on sometimes. And just encouragement, if, you know, your husband's broken or going through a hard time, whatever, be careful with your words. I will, Helen and I just celebrated 50 years. I'm astonished. One of my best friends has just gone through divorce. She left him a month ago, and I'm reminded every day, because we're accountability partners, when I talk to him, her incredible commitment to me when I was broken. And the crazy thing about that, it made our marriage stronger. And it's funny, you know, you go through a broken season, you don't come out the same. You either get stronger or weaker. And I got stronger in Jesus, and our marriage got stronger. And I don't want to go through it again, but I'm very grateful that I went through it.
David, you know, you talked about, you know, being a leper once, you know, things have crashed, right? And I think there's something that having faith in Christ does for people, which is, you don't base your earthly success, doesn't account for who you are, because you know, you've always got that life in Christ. But during those times, did you ever feel like there was a kind of spiritual warfare around you, which was like, okay, now he's down, we're going to like kick him even harder and just drag it even further down to maybe corrupt you? Was there any feelings of that in there at all?
I'm a bit of a born optimist. I think I was empowered by my wife's love and also by the church's love. But yeah, there was one day, we'd been here for a year, and Word Records wanted to sign Rebecca. Rebecca St. James, also my daughter, and this was exactly 33 years ago. And they'd committed to sign her to a new a record deal, and we were going to get $10,000 as an advance, which automatically would get us out of poverty. On the day that deal was to be signed and we were to get the check, they pulled out of that. And so for Helen and I, who'd been looking forward to basically being able to pay the bills in a timely manner, that was a bit of a crushing blow. And the next day, both of us couldn't get out of it. And in the movie, it looks like I can't get out of bed for two or three days. But it was really just for one day. You know what Hollywood's like. They exaggerate a little bit to keep you interested. But I think there is something about us knowing we're on the other side for a reason, and then being loved on by the people at the church, and then almost every week seeing prayers answered. We've never lived like that before, and I'm always trying to find new things, find new opportunities. You know, I'm prepared to go where angels fear to tread. You know, I'm an artist development guy, really. That's what my strength is as a manager. So I think I'm a bit optimistic. So I think that helped us. But I think my wife's extraordinary love for me when I was broken, and the church's love for us, and seeing Jesus' hands and feet, that was like when you see a miracle every week. I'll tell you the best story out of that. So we were supposed to get a $10,000 advance. So the songwriter came to me and said, "Smallbone, okay, I know the deal fell over. I'm going to give you the $10,000." And I go to him and say, "Oh, you know, it reminded me of my failures, my brokenness, and I had to give him something back. So I said to him, I'm going to give you back Rebecca's publishing," which didn't mean anything at the time because she didn't have a record deal or an agreement with anybody. And he said, okay, I'll take that. He didn't want to do it initially, but I'll take that. And then over the next 10 years, I think that made him $200,000-$300,000. You know, like out of, he gave us that 10. He wasn't even wanting it back. Because, you know, Rebecca's career started to do well. And in God's economy, that was a beautiful moment because he after looking after us for those first couple of years, he went over to be a missionary in Ukraine, and he was there for 10 years. And we were able to finance him being a missionary. I think just a wonderful reminder of the beauty of God's economy.
Wow. So, I mean, you've kind of walked us through, you know, the sad part of the story. Can walk us through kind of the rebuilding process, because where you are now, you'd say, you know, you're certainly not there. A lot of time has passed. For those of our listeners that don't know, you're a lot of, so, family's doing much better. Again, we've hinted at it. There's a movie that we're pushing our listeners to go check out and watch the movie to get the full story. But just walk us through. How did that start to shift? When did you guys start kind of pulling out of that? Walk us through kind of the rebuilding process and what started to shift that.
Well, as soon as, so then a year after that, we signed a deal with another record label. And then Rebecca starts going on the road. And what was crazy, a lot of people, when they start their careers, they'll have a lot of debt. They'll have $50,000 to $100,000 in debt when they, and you probably guys have heard some of those stories. We couldn't get credit in America. So we had no debt. So the first concert Rebecca does, which started 32 years ago, we're in the black. I think we probably made $100. And so
Dave Ramsey approves of this message.
So, what's that?
I said Dave Ramsey approves of this message.
Never thought of that. And then one of the beautiful things that happened is Helen made a decision, because to survive emotionally, we had a school just a quarter of a mile down the road, and she said when we arrived here 34 years ago, she said, I'm gonna homeschool. I need the kids to survive emotionally. So when we started Rebecca's career, all the family came on the road. So the family became Rebecca's crew. You know, one of the eldest son did, he did the lighting. The next son down did video. Joel was Rebecca's backup singer and also stage manager. Luke helped with the lighting. And then my youngest son started running at this follow spot at 8 and then went on to run Rebecca's merch at 14. All those people are now in the industry, and they did their apprenticeship supporting Rebecca. And so when For King and Country started, went on the road 12, 13 years ago, they had already done their apprenticeship, and they were prepared. And instead of going to college and getting head knowledge, they had practical experience. So they came out of the chute very strong, and that's a product. So we were in the black from day one, from 32 years ago with Rebecca, and courtesy of David Ramsey, which we hadn't heard of him then, but he needs to interview us for us to tell him that story. I hadn't thought of that before, but we did go to his. He lives down the road where he's got his ministry just down the road from us. But when the movie came out, he invited us to go to his staff retreat and do a devotional and talk about the movie. So he does very good work.
David,
did I answer your question?
Oh yeah, yeah. It's something I've been thinking about a lot lately, because, you know, I have a background in the music industry too, and the Christian music industry has changed. I think if you go on YouTube now, you've got artists who have, I think What a Beautiful Name has 1 billion views on YouTube, right? I remember when I first started listening to Phil Wickham in 2014, I went online to look at him, and I was like, oh, look at that. He has 7,000 views of Beautiful. And it's an amazing song. But he had 7,000 views of it. And I kept thinking, I have some silly cat videos that probably have more views than that. And I thought it's a pity for someone so talented. But now you go on there and he's got millions and millions and millions of views. But the music industry in Christian music is definitely changing. Are you at all worried about it becoming overly commercialized or not staying truly faithful to being worship rather than the fear of those who make the music being worshipped?
I think after what I've been through, I don't necessarily live in fear, but, you know, sometimes I get into trouble for saying this, but I find myself at 75, cynical in the music business, love the church, and are trying to bring, in my small area of influence, trying to bring the church into how we do business. Whenever I see challenges, and I think even with the passing of Charlie Kirk, you know, what is our takeaway from that? I think our takeaway for all of us, and I've been thrilled to see what's going on in America, even though I was challenged by his passing, for all of us to be louder about Jesus. Because, you know, last year I was worried about the future of America, because I was seeing governments making a lot of bad decisions. And I was thinking, hey, unless there's some changes here, America could easily go communist. and I've visited a lot of communist countries, and they're the saddest places I've ever visited. And so, but you know what excites me about America is the battle between good and evil is on this country. And I think, and I know quite a few people who are involved in current political leadership, and Trump is not everyone's favorite person. I think he was the right man for the right time, but he has a lot of Christians around him. His chief of staff is a Christian, a buddy of mine who was his church liaison guy for the last election. He's about to go up and work for Pete Hegseth, I think, and help the military have a spiritual perspective. There's quite a lot of serious Christian people up there, and so I'm very, very hopeful for America. But I do go back and say this to anyone who's prepared to listen. I hope you take Charlie Kirk's passing and this new energy as a challenge to be louder. And I say this because I was lukewarm for the first half of my life. Now I believe my responsibility is to challenge anyone I meet. And yesterday I was with, I've got a foot infection at the moment, and one of my doctors was worried that I didn't have good blood flow in my feet. So I go to a vascular specialist, and blow me down. The guy who treats me is a doctor from Iran. So I say to him, I say, "Hey, buddy, are you Christian or Muslim?" And he says, "I'm not." You know, I said, "Well, what do you do when you're not being a doctor?" He said, "Oh, I work on my cars and I listen to music." And so he's got two kids, and his wife's a surgeon. So, and I said, I told him, I said, "Okay, the great thing about Jesus is he challenges you to give your life away, and that's when you find it. That's when you find yourself." Going by my life experience, I can only tell him my testimony. And then, as I was leaving, what I did, I'm the ultimate sampler. I gave him two of the King Country's albums. One of them has a really good song on it called "Benediction," which my sons just sang at one of the producers of the movie passed away from brain cancer. They went over to First Presbyterian in Hollywood and sang it there. So I gave him those two albums. I gave a couple of his staff the two of the girls that helped us, I gave the film. And then I gave the receptionist, who was very nice to me, I gave her some music as well. So I'm a for Jesus follower, but I've been pointed to living a different way, and I can only do what I can do. But my challenge to anyone watching, listening, is find a way of encouraging the Christians to go louder with Jesus, and then the non-Christians telling them your testimony, because your testimony is the biggest thing that can possibly change them. They've all heard the Bible recited and all that type of stuff. They really want to know that this Jesus thing is real, and you have the opportunity of sharing that with them.
Yeah, and David, back to the question on the Christian music side of things, where I was sort of going with that was I love the amplification of Jesus in the public square. I love seeing Phil Wickham and Brandon Lake playing in massive stadiums to people. I love seeing King and Country. I love seeing these big productions rather than, you know, punk bands and some of the, you know, the garbage that's out there that is secular that these people on stage wanted to be worshipped. Again, my fear with it is that Christians stay grounded and see it as entertainment, but as worship as well. and with seeing Ticketmaster, seeing all the big music labels and big publishers pouring into Christian music, that's where I fear that they've got to be really true to stay away from any kind of corruption in that area.
My takeaway is that I'm on some committees here in town. It's a battle between good and evil. And at the end of the day, you and I have responsibility for what we do. And so what I do in my small area of influence, I encourage accountability. What we have with the King Country, I own a third of the King Country, there's a three-man vote. And so over the years, we've had to make a lot of hard decisions. I've got voted out because whoever gets the two vote, that's what we do. And so I've got voted out on occasions. Luke gets voted out on occasions. Joel gets voted out, and we don't necessarily like it, but it's allowed for wisdom. And my encouragement to any of you, if you have influence with anybody, if you even have influence at your local church, if you're on, you know, the elders board, take that responsibility seriously. Because sometimes I think a lot of elders boards, they're all the successful business guys in the local community, but are the decisions spirit-led? And I think the other thing we can do, Ian, is pray. We can pray. Like, the crazy thing for me, my wife came to me at the beginning of 2020 and said, because when we first got married, we'd pray together and I'd go to sleep. That offended her. So she came to me beginning of 2020 and said, David, I want to start praying every night. So we now pray every night together. Last night I prayed, tonight she'll pray. We'll pray for whatever the issues are going on. We'll pray for the industry. We prayed last night, we prayed for Charlie Kirk's wife. And then we prayed for people thinking, oh, this prayer is not going to be answered. We prayed for a lady who had lung disease, and we thought, oh, that prayer is not going to be answered. Blew me down. 2 months later, she got a lung transplant. I ran into her down at the coffee shop the other day. She's got years and years to go. And so I think in our own world, we hold each other accountable. You know, we have a problem with men that we get distracted by pornography. And if any of you guys are doing pornography, you need to stop it. You know, because the Lord is not going to be, the Lord is not going to be around you. But the other thing that I would say, have men, particularly this is for the men, women have to do it automatically, but men, we're soloists, you know, but find accountability, because you've got a certain amount of time left. I want to encourage you to max it out. You can't do it by yourself. Look on every question, look for wisdom, look for accountability. Us men, we fire, women, not so much. But when you look at Billy Graham, what was one of the reasons he did so well? Changed the world. My wife made her decision to follow Jesus at Sydney, at a big event he did in Sydney when she was 15. I'm so thankful. I've had a wonderful life. But I think, you know, praying for functionality, what Billy Graham had was accountability. Why was he so successful? He was just a good preacher. You and I have seen more articulate, more powerful, more charismatic preachers, but that boy changed the world. And part of it was he had this accountability on the road with him, which I've rarely seen. I preach that pretty loud. And my, you know, with you guys being, you know, C.S. Lewis enthusiasts, that accountability thing, I would have been encouraging you to, because he's saying, okay, his challenge to us is don't be self-centered. You know, you look at what is the major takeaway from C.S. Lewis? Don't focus on self. Give your life away to Jesus. And I think that accountability thing, I don't think we talk about it enough. And you look at when a pastor falls or an elder falls, if you generally look at it, there's a lack of accountability. There were signs, but no one did anything about it.
Yeah, I think submitting to godly authority, you know, there's safety in a multitude of counselors. You kind of hinted at that a lot, but I mean, I appreciate you sharing how that was apparently really impactful in leading your story along the way, and especially the way I really like you, Dave. I like the way you talk.
Well, I
appreciate what you're saying, man. You're spot on with some stuff. Thank you for
I'm 3 score and 15, about 3 score and 16, but I do go off on tangents. But I am astonished. I can't understand why someone would buy the lie of the culture and live a life half lived when the three of us know that we give our life away to Jesus, and it's the adventurous life. Why go the way of boredom? When the way of adventure, and I think that's when I totally gave my life away and gave everything to Jesus, like happened when we came to America. It was a incredible gift, and I think we're all on a journey, and for none of us it happens overnight. It's slowly but surely. One of the things that I do in artist development, managing both Rebecca in the early days and now for King Country, I love God's way. Like, I look what he's done in my life. It's been slowly but surely. Now, okay, you get something thrown at you, like losing everything, and, you know, there's a bit of growth, but keeping on building, you know, like, and trying to be faithful, and, you know, this is another thing that I don't know if Ian remembers this, but another thought that my wife shares whenever she goes out and speaks, and she goes out pretty regularly. We're going somewhere. Oh, we're going over Sacramento this weekend, but to speak at a women's conference. But this is something that really connects, a bit like that other comment, Ian, that she said that, you know, she was supportive of me when I was feeling like a failure. But she came across some data a little while ago that if you read the Bible 3 times a week, it doesn't change behavior. But if you read it 4 times a week, 4 times or more a week, it will change behavior. It stops infidelity 60%, or minimizes it 60%. It minimizes viewing of pornography and encourages you to be more evangelical 200%. And, like, that little piece of data is just a reminder to keep on feeding good food, because I think sometimes we can easily feel, well, we've arrived. And the enemy is pursuing us all. And we have a responsibility. And that's what I love about the church. I love that the church is feeding us good food. And we have community. I'll tell you, this is a really interesting story. So our publisher suicided, mainstream publisher, Warner Chappell, he suicided earlier this year at 49. Probably the best mainstream music publisher in America. If he's not the best, he'd be in the top 5. His first wife had passed away from cancer, brain cancer. She had 15 years, passed away 3 years ago. He falls in love middle of last year, starts dating this girl, 3 months, love each other, it's beautiful, get married, 2 months, she leaves him after 2 months, he suicides 2 months later. What was the challenge in that world? While his first wife was alive, she would take him to church. Then with the challenges of business and probably why did God allow my first wife to pass away, 3 children, he was overwhelmed. And then his second marriage not working, he took it really hard. He wasn't in church. And my encouragement to everybody watching this, if you're not in church, start going to church next Sunday.
Absolutely.
Because it helps you with your mental health. And Naomi Judd, I ran into Naomi Judd just 6 months before. She used to live close to me. She was at the Walgreens just down the road from where I live, and she lives on a little farm just further out from me. And I said, because I'd heard she was in church. I heard she was Christian. I said, oh, what church are you going to now, Naomi? She said, oh, I'm not going to church. And she was, oh, I'm not going to church anymore, a bit angry. She committed suicide. And I don't want that for anybody. And I think we sometimes undervalue the wonder of church. And I saw it with my own eyes when the church loved on me.
Yeah.
I was changed. And I'm a loud apologist for church.
So, David, I have one last question and a bit of a story for you. And this is where I sometimes feel God leads me in amazing ways, is at 12 years old, my son Oliver developed ulcerative colitis. He was bleeding quite profusely. And this will tear me up. My wife would listen outside the bathroom door as he was in extreme pain through this. And, you know, as I was researching, trying to give her hope, we were praying a lot. I looked up a story because I wanted to find other people who lived amazing lives with that disease. And I found the story of Luke, your son.
Me too.
Right. Because it's one of the, you as a father, you know, you think, break their arm, okay, we can do this to help. When they have something internal like that, it kind of becomes crushing because there's nothing you can do. And all me and my wife could lean on is prayer. Like it really like brought us to a deeper faith because we would pray together for him, and she would roll over in bed and wake me up and say, you need to pray for Oliver. Keep praying for Oliver. And I'm happy to say that, you know, Luke's story was very refreshing and inspiring that he came through it. But before you tell us a little bit about Luke's journey and that is, I just took him back to college in San Diego and he had a colonoscopy as a follow-up. And the doctor told me in recovery that he has absolutely no sign whatsoever of colitis in his system at the moment.
Wow. Can you give me, I'd be interested in talking to his doctor because Luke still has to have infusions every 2 months. So
Oliver's still on Entyvio. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right. But they even say that, you know, those biologics can help suppress it. But when they do biopsies and things like that, they'll still find it at the microscopic level. And I want to, you know, we're at this pivot point, right, where Oliver's like, so I can go off these infusions. I don't have to do them anymore. And the doctor's like, don't, because if we see people do that, then they, but I think he's healed. And it's like, where do you lean on faith at this point? Because do you like say, okay, just go off it. And let's just trust God. Or is you take the point of view that like both the people who create these amazing drugs and the doctors that treat them and everything else is what helps you get through. But it's enough about me on this. How's Luke doing with this? And how's the story with you? And because, you know, people could listen to your story and go, okay, you had this crash, you fell, and everything was just great after that. But then you have this as well.
And this happened at the beginning of for King Country. And it was, I still remember when we were on the road, and it was incredibly sobering. And it got to the point that he just couldn't get out of bed. And the turning point came when we did a crusade with Greg Laurie. And so we were still performing without him. And Joel, in a funny kind of way, had always wanted to be a solo artist until Luke was no longer on the road with us. And Luke wasn't on the road with us for about 3 months. And part of that time, he couldn't get out of bed. And we were a little concerned about whether he was going to survive. But he watched the band performing with Greg Laurie, and something changed in him then that he decided, we're going to work to get healthy again. And so we ended up getting, the best advice possible. And since that time, and I think that was probably 12 years ago, he's been on infusions every second month. And we thought he was maybe past it, and he went off the infusions maybe 6-8 months ago, and the symptoms came back, and he had to go back. He's doing very well. He put up a post yesterday about Charlie Kirk and, following on what the pastor said at the church on Sunday. And I think, just like my experience of losing everything took me closer to Jesus, his ulcerative colitis has taken him closer to Jesus. And he is a wonderful apologist. And you put those two guys together, you put Joel together with Luke. Luke brings the ministry element to the table. Joel brings the presentation and the promotion to the table. And it's 1 + 1 = 3. And as the three of us know, God works in mysterious ways. And I was just out with dinner with him. He and his three kids, we were out for dinner last night because one of his sons was playing football with another one of my grandsons just down the road from our house. So we went and had dinner. But he's doing well, and he's a great apologist.
That's awesome to hear. David, thank you so much for joining us. We could go on for hours just chatting to you about this. And I think this is the beauty. I went to my men's group last night, and my wife said, "Why are you back so late?" It's because when it finished, I stood around talking to other Christians for another hour afterwards and got home later. And it's just a wonderful time. And as I say, thank you so much. Gail, and I'll let you do the show wrap.
Well, thank you so much, David. It's been fantastic chatting with you, and really a kindred spirit. And I'll share one last insight, just something that I'm observing. Obviously, your children are prominent artists that are getting out there. As somebody who's a lot of times consuming Christian media, consuming Christian music, you always wonder in the back of your head, are these people really Christian, or are they just doing it because there can be good money and fame in it? And I just appreciate hearing the father of some of the people that are out there and just hearing your heart. Yeah. You're a kindred spirit. You're a man on fire for the Lord. You're walking in the Spirit. And I just want to thank you so much for your time today, and also your passion over the years, and just the way that you allowed your life story and your trial to be something that built your faith in a way that's impacting the world today. So I just want to thank you sincerely for the time, the hour that you gave us, and for everything that you've done and are continued to do. We'll be praying for your life and ministry and your family and your children as well. And then last thing I want to say, how can we get our listeners able to watch the movie? Where should people go? I'd be really remiss if we wrapped this and didn't give people a clear way of knowing. How do they watch the movie where they can see kind of the full story?
Yeah, it's up on, I think, most of the streamers now. And so it was funny the other day, I heard from somebody, they're on their way to Ethiopia on Emirates Airlines, and Blow Me Down, Unsung Hero, showed up on a Muslim airline, so I thought, it's going, but it is available. You can stream it. I should know, the different streamers, but I think initially not everybody had it, but now I think, I don't think it's on Netflix, but I think it's on available on most of the others. I will say one thing, and it was interesting what Ian just said, that he was laid home from the men's group because he got talking to the people. I think what happens in our Christian music world a lot of times, we're so used to allowing the artist to speak on stage and that we're behind the scenes doing all that, that we forget we have a responsibility to talk about our testimony with our friends. And so my encouragement to anyone listening, don't be afraid to tell your story and, you know, talk about the weather, talk about family, talk about other things, but try and find a way every day to bring Jesus to somebody that you might not think of doing anything. Before coming here, I just was at a coffee shop and I met some people who I'd never met before, and one of them is a new artist in town, and I was able to share, you know, some thoughts with him. And you know, honestly, one of the major thoughts in God's economy and working in Christian music, be prepared to do a lot of the little things, because a lot of artists think, well, I just want to sing at a mega church, or I want to be in front of the big crowd or whatever. No, in God's economy, if you're faithful with the small things and you're really called to do music ministry, he will amplify that. And, you know, we all know that when we're faithful and small, he will help us do whatever he wants us to do.
That's a good word. That's a good word. Well, thank you again. It's been a great time hearing your story, talking and unpacking that. And to our listeners, thanks for listening. Check out the movie Unsung Heroes on your streaming service. Give it a look. I have not seen it, but my wife and I are excited to sit down and watch it over the next week here. So thank you for joining us, David. And to our listeners, thanks for joining us for this special edition episode of Screwtape Letters podcast, Confronting Evil in Our Time. We'll look forward to seeing you again next time.